Hey guys, welcome to the Martial and Healing Arts channel. I'm Rafe Kelly, founder of Evolve Move Play. I'm extremely excited to be sponsoring this channel. Martial and Healing Arts have been key aspects of embodiment and self-cultivation for thousands of years. I have some of my best friends in the industry, Rory Miller, Matt Thornton, Edward Hines, presenting here, and I'm really excited to share what they have to say with you guys. You're gonna love it. So Evolve Move Play is an ecology of practices of movement, mindfulness, nature connection, and community. And within the movement, we have a big emphasis on moving in nature and being able to do parkour. We also like to lift weights and throw things around, but there's a huge aspect of martial arts, and I've been training martial arts since I was 6 years old. So it's really exciting to be able to sponsor this channel in particular. If you're interested in my work, check out my talks on the Main Stage and the Movement Anatomy channel. If you can't get to either of those live, you can check us out at Rafe Kelly on Instagram, get all your awesome embodiment giveaways. And for now, just enjoy this amazing channel. It's gonna be an awesome show.
Welcome to this session with Philip Smith, Sensei. So Philip Smith has been one of my keto teachers over the years. Actually, it means a lot to me. He and his family and his extended Aikido family, I actually think really saved my life at a time when I was, a bit of a reprobate, didn't really have anything, didn't have the potential perhaps that you might see today. And they essentially took me in. And, his dad really helped me a lot, Philip and the other teachers at a place called Wrench and Can, really when I was in a very bad way and as a young man. And I think, I learned Aikido from these guys, the martial art of Aikido. But I think more than that, they were just a positive influence on me, a community of people who were a positive influence on me. And a lot of what I think we all benefit from in the conference, I learned there. So not so much wrist locks and arm locks, but character, how to be a man, how to be a human being, how to be a leader, how to treat people well, how to build community. These are the things I learned through Aikido. So yes, there's a martial art. You know, I've always enjoyed the sort of physical rigorous side with Philip, who, by the way, is a very kick-ass, I think at least 6-degree black belt, what's called a Shihan, which if you don't know Aikido is kind of a big deal. And especially when it comes from a place called Honbu Dojo, which Philip has strong connections with. It's like the headquarters of Aikido globally. And, he has the full lineage of Aikido, but he's also a sports scientist and he worked as a physiotherapist. He works as a lecturer at Coventry University on sports science and various other subjects. That might be slightly inaccurate and not up to date, Philip. So you have to tell me if I've missaid that. So scientific mind as well as strong traditional martial arts training. But as I said, the key thing for me, this is someone who he and his family have saved my life, and everything that we all benefit from at this conference, so much of that came from that education through Aikido. So I said to myself, you know what, I'm normally on the night shift, but I was not going to miss this one. I said, I want to, show some respect and get up personally to host. So Philip, you're welcome.
Yeah, thank you very much. Follow that, as I say. As Mark says, we met through Aikido, and we've stayed strong friends ever since. And, he's the the bit of the family we don't talk about, really. Okay. But no, we've been good friends for a very long time, and I hope we continue to be. Okay, so what I'm going to talk about today is this, really. Mark mentioned a few things about Aikido training and how it's benefited him. And I decided, let's go back, to try and take this onto a sort of more scientific basis a few years ago. So looked at doing a research project on adolescent boys.
Philip, sorry to interrupt, your sound's very on and off, so I think you even need a headset or to sort of stay more still.
Okay, is that better?
Yeah,
is that better?
Okay, there's okay.
Okay. So we decided to look at it a bit more rigorously and to see if we could do any scientific analysis, really. For those of you who don't know what Aikido is, it's a Japanese martial art. It's a modern expression of many traditional Japanese martial arts, characterized in a way by locks and throws. And the ethos, though, is slightly different from, say, competition karate or competition judo, because it's non-confrontational, and the emphasis is entirely on cooperation between the participants. So if we look at the ethos in a bit more detail, This is how it's described. It's not a sport. It's a discipline, an educational process. And it's not just, I mean, people do, but ideally you don't just turn up and just train. You turn up and you learn how to discipline yourself, how to develop yourself as a person, really. So the technique is a tool for self-development. And along with that is the, it's inherent in all martial arts, all traditional martial arts, respect, sincerity, and modesty. Okay.
Hey, Philip, I'm sorry about this. The sound's really in and out. Do you have a headset that you could use?
I do. I can try a headset.
Let's give that a try. Yeah. Roma, can you confirm that you're also hearing the sound issues and it's not my end?
Yes, I also hear the sound issues.
Okay. Let's try my headset.
Your host here, by the way, Roma, Philip, Roma is a fairly serious black belt in Badoru Karate. So,
all right, okay, so...
She's part of the martial arts family.
I'm looking forward to the session, Philip. Already in it.
Yeah, is that better?
That is better, thank you.
That is so much better.
Okay, great. Okay, so, So this is an old Japanese saying, and we actually have a scroll written by Osanse, who founded modern Aikido, in our dojo that says this. So every time we go on the mat, this is what we're sort of after. What we do, we set up some training rules before we started the research. So no room for argument. And each student not to use the technique in a sort of egotistical way, but as a cooperative, collaborative way. And again, no conflicts of ego, which occasionally was a little difficult, and no competition, and to respect everybody's physical abilities. And when I talk about the population we looked at, you'll see that this really needed to be said sometimes. And obviously to look after each other in terms of responsibility. Now, these are general training rules, but before we started the project, we made them absolutely crystal clear to all the participants. We also made clear before we were allowed to do anything ethically about the health benefits of martial arts in general and the physical benefits. Okay, so these are for anyone to see, really. They increase their aerobic capacity and so on and so on. The picture there, by the way, Mark mentioned my dad. That's my dad throwing me about as a young man. You can see we're sort of quite into this really as a family. This is what we really wanted to concentrate on, though, and the mental health benefits were over time have been identified by several authors, and as you can see there, going back to 1996. But there's still this idea in particularly educational circles that martial arts has very little educational value. There's also been some evidence of social benefits. Again, going back quite a long time, back to 1986, in actual fact, where counterintuitively for many people, the practice of traditional martial arts showed a decrease in aggressiveness, anxiety, and so on. As Mark mentioned, we have a dojo, full-time dojo. It's run by amateurs, but it's full-time in the sense we have classes every day. And it started in 1986 by my father. And then at the moment, we have 2 seventh dans teaching there. We're recognized by the Aikikai Foundation in Japan and also by Sport England. And we, when they had, the club marker's actually finished, so I need to remove this. But at the time of the research, we were a club mark organization. That means we apply the highest standards of student welfare in sport. So what did we do? Well, what we did, we pitched to a local charity that we would provide a course of 8 sessions, 90-minute sessions, to their population, which I'll discuss a bit more in a minute, that there was a fixed syllabus and content for each session, supervised by the governing body registered coaches, everybody first aid, DBS registered. Each participant had a certificate of completion, and we felt that was really important, because it was a target for them to aim for that perhaps they wouldn't have aimed for otherwise. And at the end, if they wished to carry on, we were going to subsidise their training fees and their membership fee. The rationale for the study was to see if these previous studies were actually true. So to look at the effect of an acute, really, Aikido program, so it's only 8 weeks, on individuals with low self-esteem or self-confidence in what we called a non-institutional setting. So some of these participants were living in children's homes. Obviously, they were at school. Some were in what called pupil referral units. So that's kids with bad behavior, really. And we wanted to see also whether it would be an acute mental health intervention in these individuals. So the charity we worked with was called Murray Hall. They're a well-established charity, and they provide in our local area support for vulnerable children, particularly those at risk of domestic abuse and things like that. And we asked them to identify people that they felt would be suitable for the program. Obviously, the participation was voluntary, but we did ask for parental or guardian consent. Like I said, some of these kids are looked after kids, or they were with members of their extended family as guardians and so on. And they were free to withdraw. And at the beginning and the end of each session, we looked at what's called the YPC tool, which is a common tool, and use a measure of well-being, really. This is
the sound cut out for a moment there. I'm not sure what happened.
Oh, no, okay.
Seconds.
So, do you want me to repeat the sort of participant profile? So, is that better?
Just the last 30 seconds, yeah.
Okay. So, the participation was voluntary. Some of these kids were looked after, so it might have been guardian consent or extended family consent. And we used the YPC tool, which I'll talk about in a minute, a bit more detail, before and after each session. And that tool is a measure of well-being, mainly in adolescents. So this YPC, it's called a Core 10. It's an generic tool. It's very short, it takes about 2 minutes. Easy to use assessment measure. And there's 10 questions and they're ranked in order. So you get a mark of 1 to 4 for each session, 4 being the worst and 1 being the least. You can get 0, but generally speaking, it's 1 to 4. It's used by what are called CAMHS, Child and Adolescent Mental Health Services, throughout the UK. Now, CAMHS are our government body, and they are responsible for looking after the mental health, particularly of school children, but any child under the age of 18. Quick and easy to complete. It uses lay language, so accessible language. And we felt that was really important. So a lot of these children have missed a lot of education. And so we felt anything that was too talky might put them off. Since 2009, it's used in pretty much all school-based counselling studies in Scotland. And it's throughout most local authority areas in England as well. And the research shows, and it's been generally accepted, that it has good psychometric properties. So it's practical for people presented with common mental health problems. The other thing about the Y10 is because it's self-filled, people are filling in as if they're filling in a questionnaire, it's not as what can sometimes be seen as confrontational when they're being talking to an interviewer or a counsellor or a researcher. So basically, they turned up at the dojo, filled in the Y10, went on the mat, did the session, came off the mat, filled in the Y10, went home. That was pretty much how it worked. As I said, you get a score from really 0 to 4. So this correlates with the client's mental state. If you get a score of 10 or above, which is quite low really, given that the maximum is 40, that indicates an individual may be at risk of harmful behaviours or in need of psychological support. So really we're talking about individuals in that 10 to 40 sort of area. It's because it's numeric, you can do statistical analysis, and I'll show you some basic statistical analysis later. There is an article freedom.edu, freedom of access, which goes into a lot more detail.
Sound just cut again, Philip.
Okay. So the statistical analysis I'll show today is actually quite just limited, but there is a full article on academia.edu, which goes into a lot more detail, obviously. So what were our inclusion criteria? Well, we wanted to make sure that we could meet the needs for the young people. So it had to be a young person. Obviously, that's all that Murray Hall deal with. So under 18 years of age, and they had to suffer from one or more of the following. In fact, we found they've suffered, on average, from about two or three of these issues. Well, they had two or three of these issues. So the anxiety, low mood, low self-esteem and or lack of confidence, low-level behavioural difficulties, anger and aggression issues, and being the victim of bullying. So any one of those, and as I say, in fact, we found the majority suffered, if you want to use the word suffered, or had more than one of these issues during the study. So three didn't attend at all. They just didn't join in with the scheme. And in fact, the attendance was patchy. Now, we sort of expected that, given the target population. Remember, these are kids who struggle at school, have always often, well, almost always in our case, been told that they're not that great, they're a bit thick, they don't behave very well, you know, that they're not from the best sort of most compliant backgrounds, if you like. So the average number of sessions were attended were only 3.44, so just under half of the sessions. Some people did attend all eight, but it was that was the average number. Pre-score, as an average for the whole group, the white P10 score, core 10 score, was 15.69. So that's above your 10 that requires psychological intervention. Okay, and that was reduced at the end. The average score was reduced to 11.83. So that's quite a, you know, we felt that was quite a good mean change. You can see, though, there's quite a lot of variation in those scores. So if you look at the standard deviation for the mean pre-score, it's plus or minus 9.7. So we had someone with a pre-score of well over 30, and we had two or three with a pre-score of zero. So we sort of, there is, and again, I didn't want to bore you with huge tables, but if you look at the individual results, all but two improved individually. I'll talk about some of the outliers a bit later on. So the mean change was around about 3.7, something like that, in the YP10 scores, core 10. So if we look at it in a bit more detail, so if we look at, break it down into below 10, so into the four areas of 0 to 10, and going up to 31 to 40. So the baseline mean of those groups, there's nine in the 0 to 10 group, nine individuals in the 0 to 10 group, and their baseline mean was 4.89, final mean was 3.67. So they improved, again, each group, as you can see, improved quite well, really, if you compare their baseline mean to their final mean after all the sessions. The biggest change we saw was in the 21 to 30 group. So these are, could be defined, and I'm not a psychologist, but they could be defined as a sort of moderate, tending towards severe group, if you like. And that showed the biggest change. The mean change there was almost three times greater than in the 11 to 20 group or the 31 to 40 group. And this is the number of sessions that people attended. So the number who attended one session, eight people only attended one session. And then, as you can see, six people attended all the sessions. Their mean change is then at the end. Okay, so the mean change, got the average there. I'll point it at the screen, which I'm used to doing in lectures. But the mean change, as you can see, There was no sort of correlation between dose and mean change. In fact, the best mean change seemed to be between 6 and 7 sessions. So if we were to run this again, we'd probably stop at 6 sessions and see. It may be that, I don't know if it's a boredom factor or the familiarity factor sets in at session 7 and 8, and they're just sort of making the numbers up. Difficult to tell. So if we summarize those scores then, so the YP score, core 10 score, fell from 15.69 to 11.3. So that's around 25% improvement. And we did see, anecdotally, a marked improvement in the mood of all of the participants. One thing we hadn't sort of banked on, but again, this is only anecdotal really, was that the parents also felt a lot happier about what their children were doing. And we got lots of positive comments off family members or guardians about, oh, you know, we really like bringing them. It's a great atmosphere. It helps them. They seem to be a lot more settled. There was a number of participants, whose YPC score was below 10 increased from 9 to 19. So that went from around about a third of the cohort to around 2/3 of the cohort. And that was probably the biggest effect that we saw, where those students that were on the verge of developing serious issues were helped to stop that or to slow that development down, if you like. But there was no correlation at all between the number of attendances and the change in YP core. Our Pearson's correlation score was so low as to be insignificant, really, 0.01. So whether it was just the fact that they attended and somebody took them seriously or not, difficult to judge. There are lots of problems with this study, to be honest. We didn't follow up any long-term effects. We didn't have the opportunity to follow them over 6 months or a year, which would have been ideal. One of the reasons for that was the program was funded through a Sport England grant, which only allowed us to work for 3 months. So by the time we'd set it up, we got the situation in place, and we could collaborate with the Murray Hall. We really were could only fit in those 8 sessions, so the long term follow up wasn't possible. Okay, there's also a small cohort.
I'll fund the next one, so you can do the long term follow up.
Okay, we can look at that then. Maybe that'd be good. So we could. We can do that. Mark and I can perhaps talk about that a little bit later. But it would be good to do, to see, because there's been some studies that suggest these effects do last. That'd be great. It was only a small cohort as well. That was another issue. We'd only had 29 participants. So, again, we would hope to do it on a bigger group. What the plan was, and we did talk to Sport England about this, and we did in fact run some sessions in schools for a period of time, but again, because of funding issues and so on, that didn't happen. Now, the problem with following up at the moment is obviously we've got the issue with the pandemic. So schools are not allowing, in many places, many schools are not allowing outside groups in. So maybe once we get back to some kind of normality, that's something we can look at. But again, it's worth discussing. We, in fact, although I said that we showed a lot of increase with the decrease on average of the YP scores, and that was very significant in some ways, 16% of the cohort actually showed an increase in YP scores. Now, we didn't notice that their behavior got worse with us. And we anecdotally, again, felt that everyone actually took it seriously and there was no issues with people storming off the mat or anything like that, which we've had in the past when we've worked with pre-pill referral units. But 16% of them showed an increase in the YP scores. Now, that it's only supposition, but we suspect that that was because of outside influences rather than the program itself. We don't know. I mean, it's very difficult to determine that. The other big, big caveat was that one individual showed, he only attended one session, and then but showed an increase of 26 points on his YP court score at the end of the session. Now, to be honest, I considered scrapping that result. I did wonder whether that participant was taking the mick a bit and just literally filling it in as a throwaway, particularly. But I felt for completeness, it should be included, but with that caveat that that was a in many ways a real outlier. So he only attended once. His YP score was poor. I gather from informal follow up with Murray Hall, he stopped attending any of their programs and sessions as well. So that's the one we perhaps, you know, regret a bit, that could perhaps have done more for, would like to have done more for. But maybe he just needed a higher level of intervention on all fronts, really. Okay, so I've actually finished a little earlier than I intended. I expected some comments throughout, but we can now throw it up. I'd like to throw it open for any Q&As, really. So any questions about the project itself, anything about what we learned from the project, how we think it affected us as a club, and so on?
Yeah, Philip, I'm really happy this is being done. And it always strikes me that, you know, Budo has always said, oh, this is for character development. And there is this sort of lots of anecdotal evidence, my own life being one, yours, many other people saying, hey, this really has helped me as a person. You know, it gave me a lot of discipline. And as I said, I'm standing on that foundation still. And yet there hasn't been that many studies on this. You know, I guess because the sort of methodologically it's quite different. And also it's just generally most martial artists aren't researchers. You know, maybe there's a little bit of like, maybe we don't want to find out that in some cases it doesn't work, you know. There's so much research done on this.
Yeah, I think one of the difficulties I found was A, getting the research taken seriously by my own institution. And so I did it, I just did it in a outside of work sort of thing. And when I did the ethical approval, it actually took me a long time to get ethical approval, because there was always the comment coming back about, you know, martial arts are inherently violent. Total misunderstanding of what martial arts are. And when I talked this over with one of my colleagues, in the presence of a quite high level sports coach, who said, yeah, so you're teaching these kids who like fighting to fight. I just thought, you know, there's a prejudicial barrier there. That's a problem. The other issue with getting stuff like this published, if you're not a psychologist, it's very difficult to get it published, which is why it's on academia.edu rather than in a journal. The work was submitted to several journals and was rejected by at least two on the basis that I'm not a psychologist. And another couple by we don't feel this would be of interest to our readers. And you just think, you know, again, there's some blinkering going on here. So I guess the next, I work with a sports psychologist now, which I didn't at the time of this research. And I'd probably like to get her involved, I think, because we'd stand a better chance of getting it more publicised.
Yeah, we could put a shout out on the conference as well for psychologists who say, look, there's someone who wants to do the research. You can co-publish a paper with them, do half the work you normally do and get a journal article. Quite attractive, especially if you could show that you'd already, you know, cut your teeth on this and you'd already done a study. Looking at this, you know, I'm academically trained psychologist and I'm looking at this and going, okay, this is a properly put together study and Philip understands the variables. Like, any academic looking at this will go, okay, this guy is more than capable of doing it.
Conversation between me and Mark now, but I was quite shocked that one of the reviews actually said, although the work was academically sound, they rejected on the basis it wasn't run by a psychologist, and therefore they felt they could endorse it. And you just think, so how do people expand their discipline? They don't in that case.
Well, if that's that's an argument from authority, which is really a logical fallacy, which is, not the person making the argument, it's the quality of the argument that should matter.
Yeah.
Okay, so another thing, if there are questions, by the way, please do put them in the chat.
Yeah.
So people but I'm quite happy to chat to Philip in the meantime. What do you think are the factors that really make the difference? And then this is just conjecture, right? Because it'd have to be a study which broke them down. Is it just, as you say, someone that cares paying attention? Like, sometimes I wonder, was it your dad taking me for dinner and just sitting down and giving me a bit of, fatherly care that was more useful than the martial arts? Or was it the breathing exercises and the centering? Was it the physical benefits just, taking away my ADHD and my stress? Yeah. Like, what do you think are the actual factors that make the biggest difference? Because Michael, it's got a lot in, hasn't it? Your sound's gone again, Philip.
Very seriously, and
for me, the biggest part of anybody taking up any kind of
can you just repeat the last sentence yourself?
The biggest part for me of anyone taking up any activity is them walking through the door. The most courageous thing you can do is step into any strange environment and take it on. So you demand respect as soon as you do that. And I think that for me, and again, like you say, it's only conjecture, but for me, that's what made the difference. They came in and we said, we are really glad to have you here. We hope you enjoy it. And for some of these kids, that's the first time they'd ever been told that. In a way, it's heartbreaking. You've got kids who've been told all their life they are no good, they're not going to do anything, to sit in the back of the classroom and shut up. And, we were saying to them, we're really pleased to see you.
Yeah.
You could see on some of those kids' faces, that was like, my God, an adult is saying to me, I'm pleased to see you. And that was, for a lot of them, a revelation. For some others, it was the discipline of it. That there was a fixed task that nobody could do, not just they couldn't do, nobody could do. And somebody was taking all these people through it. And for some of them, particularly the ones who did the whole
session, a couple of them. Yeah. Sound again, Philip.
Sorry, a couple of them were actually better at it than their peers. And that was the first time, again, they'd been good at something. So I think there's a lot of factors that go into making it good for a good experience for those kids. And maybe that was it. The fact that it was just a better experience than they were used to having and made their mental well-being better.
Yeah, we'd see this when I used to work in outdoor education. I used to do that in the summer between training with you guys, often in the winter. And terrible time of year to stay at wrenching camp, of course. In the summer, I used to do these summer camps, and there'd be like 8 weeks or 12 weeks, and the kids would come from schools. And I'd say, listen, on day one, I don't know who's academic, I don't know who's clever, I don't know who's naughty, I don't care, just give this a go. I'll be fair to all of you. And because they were in such a different environment, it was like a reset. So the ones that were naughty or a bit dumb or whatever academically, it was all reset and they were neutral with me. And then one of them would be really good at archery. And, he'd just get in the bullseye every time. Or one of them would just be really brave on the climbing wall. And everyone would be like, wow. And it sometimes was the first time these kids had been acknowledged as sort of good at anything. And the teachers would say, wow, this is... And it wasn't the fact that it was climbing or archery or maybe Aikido. It was just the fact that they were good at something. They were treated seriously. That, they could show up well. And who weren't kids that weren't good academically.
That's right. And I see this a lot with my professional sort of physiotherapy head on, in that if someone's told something, their belief is that often grows that way. So one of my issues is I often do get clients who've had, let's just say, not optimal experiences with healthcare. So they'll be told something. They'll be told, oh, you've got this problem. That's not going to go away. And it's false belief. You know, it perpetuates a cycle, like any cycle. You know, it's almost like a positive feedback. Question from Zach. Do you think it's because they have no judgment? Yeah, so it might be. I think that's a good point. You know, we didn't judge them at all. And like Mark said about the summer school, summer camps. Come in. We don't care who you are. And, you know, you're all level. And it's something that my dad used to say a lot to people. Aikido is a great leveler. Once you step on the mat, we are all equal. Not quite true, but but in terms of, it doesn't matter whether you're a street sweeper or the CEO of a multinational company, you're what you are on the mat, and that's that. And I think, again, just accepting them for what they were sometimes helps, you know. And seeing them as individuals, you know, a comment there from Caroline, yeah, the recognition that they're individuals in their own right and they've got some merit. As I say, it'd be interesting to do a longer-term study, and I think that's something we'll look at once we can get numbers back on mats and so on. And maybe even a multi-centre study rather than just the one centre. Might be difficult to arrange, though. One thing we did do was we made the classes as similar as possible. So we actually, I sat down and wrote down what we were going to do, class one, class two, class three, to try and introduce an element of control, because there are three available sessions a week. The other thing I didn't say on the presentation, we didn't allow them to cross-fertilise, as it were. So there was a session on a Monday, a Wednesday and a Saturday, and they did either the Monday, the Wednesday or the Saturday. They didn't go Monday and Wednesday, Wednesday and Saturday. Now, that's not because they varied, because they were exactly the same content. What I wanted to do was eliminate the sort of personal relationship. Well, it wasn't so much creating a bubble or a capsule, Caroline, but I wanted to avoid was creating a personal relationship with a different teacher. So if they got a teacher on a Wednesday that they didn't like as much as the teacher on a Saturday, that might have confounded the results. So I just tried to make it, you know, as simple as I could, so I could analyse it, really. Chicken out a bit.
Take the things apart, wouldn't it? I mean, if you had a really big study, you could say, okay, we're going to do one in a uniform, one in not a uniform. We're going to do one with Aikido, karate. We're going to do one with modern sports, martial arts, MMA, and then compare that to Aikido. We're going to look at the personality types of the teachers. And, you know, is it mostly the teacher's influence? Is it... You know, if your dad had been teaching me ancient history, would I have got such a positive influence? Yeah. We're all just guessing because those factors are all confounded in one big pot currently.
I think there is a thing, isn't there? You know, it's often, can you hear me? Yeah. My mic's cut. Oh, there we go. There is a thing, isn't there? You know, everybody has a favourite teacher, and you remember someone from school who was inspiring or motivating, or, you know, maybe, or from university or wherever, or from a job you had. And how much that individual counts towards your eventual development and well-being, it's a difficult thing to say.
Yeah.
In my teacher, most people did avoid him, you know, but because he was, let's just say, extremely harsh at times. He was what I needed, and I think without him, I wouldn't be doing Aikido and wouldn't be where I am now. But it's a, you know, that's different personalities, isn't it? You know,
Philip, can you stop your screen share? Because at the moment, what people can see is a big question mark.
Oh, okay, I'll stop the screen
share. There we go. There's a question here from Layla. My teenage son did Aikido for years and wanted to go back to it recently, but it was all online, so he didn't fancy it. Any advice about young people continuing their practice in current conditions?
Difficult. I mean, we're back, but we're doing just body movement and weapons because we're avoiding contact at the moment. It's and that's a huge issue. I recently, before they shut down so much, I did a summer school in Poland. And I've got to say, the high I got from actually being able to throw people about and having contact with people was incredible. And I sometimes think we underestimate in traditional martial arts just that feeling of contact with other people. And I wonder how important that actually is to our enjoyment and motivation and everything else. But at the moment, it's difficult. Well, I mean, I don't know where your questioner is. So that can make a huge difference.
Yeah, it's interesting that touch factor is a big one, isn't it? And Aikido, like, unlike a lot of martial arts, has extended touch and also has harmonious movement. You know, I remember your dad saying to me when he had cancer and he was old and sick, and he'd say, you know, I'd move with you and Pete and I'd feel better just for moving with you.
Yes.
And that harmonious movement was very therapeutic, I think, for him physically. But I think for me at the time, psychologically, you know, to move with someone else in a way that was powerful but not abusive, to run that through, that power through your system without hurting anyone, that's an incredible gift.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I mean, I mentioned my teacher earlier on, and, you know, often people saw him as quite abusive. But I always, looking back now, and there were times when I thought, you know, he was just too hard on me. But looking back now, actually, it took me to a limit that I didn't know I got. Now, whether that was by design or accident, I'm not entirely sure sometimes. But that's what I mean about where would I be now without that. I responded to that. Some people wouldn't respond to that. They just walk away. And you've got to, this is where the individual relationships come in of some people need an arm around them. Some people need a kick up the backside, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But there we are. That's a whole different issue, I think.
Lila's in Brighton. Lila, so the Kyokido Club in Brighton is still doing weapons in the park, if you want
to. Oh, okay. Yeah.
I happen to know that one of the clubs there is still trading outside. So look up Kyokido Brighton. They're still doing some in-person stuff with sticks that your lad might enjoy.
Okay. Yeah. We're doing inside stuff with sticks, but we're in Birmingham. So... I think at the moment it's just an incredibly difficult time for all martial artists, really. You know, I mean, saying that, I had a great session last night. There was half a dozen of us. We did an hour and a half just working on little nuances of weapons, really, which I'm not sure everybody else enjoyed, but I did.
As you said, there's different things you can learn from it. Sometimes it's the patience of sitting in Seiza listening to a Japanese teacher go on. You know, sometimes it's coming to one of your Gordon's. You know, I had to develop courage. You know, your sessions were so intense, I'd be really like gearing myself up for it. And you know, other times it's the side factors. Like I remember Mario brought me some nice food one time. Me and Pete had been living off pot noodles for weeks. A nice Italian man brings us some proper food, and it just felt like the most loving thing ever. You know, we were just delighted. So sometimes, or Pat would, you know, just sort of listen to us for 10 minutes as we, you know, complained. And I'd go, wow, those other factors, sort of community, you know, as much as the fitness and the discipline and the, you know, the techniques. But I'm also glad that I had that very intense training. And people tend to think of sort of personal growth stuff has to be, you know, very gentle and soft and trauma aware.
Yes.
And that's,
yeah.
I couldn't do what I'm doing now at the conference had I not had that experience that I can look back on and say, okay, yeah, but I survived that. You know, I got through that. That, you know, we'd wake up in all the war stories. I won't bore everyone with them, but to have done something very, very intense is,
And the other thing is that connection, you know, if we're talking a bit more sort of esoteric, if you like. That connection is still there. So Pete came to see me in Poland. And we had 2 days together.
And sound again.
We got caught at the mat where we sort of rumbled. But I haven't, well, I don't remember the last time I trained with Pete. And probably the last time we were together was at your wedding celebration in Brighton. So it was 3 years ago, yeah? So, you know, face to face, that physically, that was probably the last contact we had. But it was still really intense because we got that emotional connection and, you know, else. And, you know, Pete, he doesn't hold back. You know.
It's true, actually. You know, it's like I was best man at Pete's wedding, you know, and then I was standing by his side at his wife's funeral.
Yeah.
And it's like,
And
came from a year of being, you know, 1 or 2 years of training Aikido.
Yeah. And, like, you know, two incredibly sad, not sad, one incredibly happy, one incredibly sad event that I couldn't get to and I still regret. That's, you know, one of my biggest regrets is not being there for him. But anyway.
Well,
we've gone completely sidetracked now from talking about Aikido and well-being.
Standing by his side at his wife's funeral and he said to me, this is what we trained for.
Yeah.
So like you train for the bad times, you train for the really extreme experiences. Yeah.
It is
as well.
It is. Yeah, that's true. That.
And he was dancing at my wedding a year later. So, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. The good times and the bad. There we go. That's what makes. And I wonder, you know, coming back to the topic that we were talking about, and I wonder whether people do pick up on that almost from the time they walk in. You know, because you've got a core group. I mean, you mentioned Gordon. I mean, Gordon and I have been friends for nearly 60 years now. And that's difficult to maintain a friendship over those years. And we're completely honest friends, you know. So we can have a discussion where it would look like we wouldn't talk again, you know. But the next day is fine. And that's... Again, I think that's a really healthy way to be.
It's going to be really interesting for me to start an Aikido school again one day, having done all this other embodiment stuff. And
bring me back.
And my interest's always been the topic of this talk is, you know, using Aikido as a form of personal growth to help people. So I might have to be something I'll come back to. I can see Zach on the screen. Zach, did you have a question?
Hi, Zach. Yeah, I think Zach's just lurking. Zach's good at lurking.
Yeah, so thanks. it's interesting to hear what you guys are saying. Sorry I came on late, actually. I've been looking after my daughter. But I was just thinking, there's kind of a transparency on the mat, isn't there? When you train, you know what somebody's like when you train with them. You kind of know really quickly. So I'm wondering if that kind of transparency of connection kind of comes through into...
Yeah.
Like you and Gordon, for example, you know, it starts to you really do know someone and what they're like as soon as you start training with them, and the more you practice, the more you can tell perhaps what the personality is like. So, I think there's something in that. Maybe I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, Mark, you know, he's made his career, and you know, he's sort of more knows more about this than any of the rest of us here, I think. You know, this connection, physical connection leading to, as you say, that sort of mental and emotional connection. And I think that's where Aikido wins over a lot of other things, because you have to have that, otherwise you're going to get seriously damaged. I mean, it's, you know, if it's done intensely, as we all know, you know, as someone's just said it, you can't be fake on the mat, you know, not really. And if you go, as I think a lot, some of you know, I travel a lot, and I don't care who I train with, you know. and sometimes you do get to go to places where they are fake, and you can tell straight away. You know, you can tell as soon as you walk in the door, this is not a great place. You know? So, I don't know. There's a lot to be said for that, I think. And, you know, those of you who know me know that I often sort of debunk that sort of stuff. But actually, I think it does exist. You know, this sort of feeling of an atmosphere. But I don't know what, you know, nothing magical about it.
Okay, so we need to wrap this up fairly soon.
Yeah,
I'm going to play
this
in a minute. Philip Smith's Facebook is there if anyone wants to be in touch with him. And yeah, I also put Ren, should someone be in Birmingham want to come do what I did and go visit it, then there it is. It's amazing to have a world-class centre of excellence in deep in the Black Country in the West Midlands. For those who are following from abroad, it's basically the area that Mordor was based on. industrial heartland of Great Britain. So wonderful, and some of the nicest people in the country I've met. So yeah, Philip, for me, this was a great boost today on a morning when I needed it. Reminded me of my core values. And
great for you to be involved, mate. I'm just happy to be involved. And just to say to everybody, you know, as I said, I've known Mark a long time. I couldn't be prouder of what he's done, and particularly with this conference. I think it's just an incredible achievement. You know, and if I'm allowed to be proud of him, I'm very, very proud of him.
Certainly are, so you make me cry. This probably wouldn't have predicted this 20 years ago.
So, absolutely not.
You wouldn't have looked at me and gone, really?
Yeah.
A conference like that.
Yeah.
So, okay, let's play Rafe's sponsor video because I promised to you.
Okay.
We'll bring you back in at the end, Philip.
Yes. Welcome to the Martial and Healing Arts Channel. I'm Rafe Kelly, founder of Evolve Move Play. I'm extremely excited to be sponsoring this channel. Martial and Healing Arts have been key aspects of embodiment and self-cultivation for thousands of years. I have some of my best friends in the industry, Rory Miller, Matt Thornton, Edward Hines, presenting here, and I'm really excited to share what they have to say with you guys. You're gonna love it. So Evolve Move Play is an ecology of practices of movement, mindfulness, nature connection, and community. And within the movement, we have a big emphasis on moving in nature and being able to do parkour. We also like to lift weights and throw things around, but there's a huge aspect of martial arts, and I've been training martial arts since I was 6 years old. So it's really exciting to be able to sponsor this channel in particular. If you're interested in my work, check out my talks on the Main Stage and the Movement Anatomy channel. If you can't get to either of those live, you can check us out at Rafe Kelly on Instagram, get all your awesome embodiment giveaways. And for now, just enjoy this amazing channel. It's gonna be an awesome show.
And it's Rafe. I did some kickboxing in the woods with him in the park and climbed some trees with him. lack of sort of nature sometimes in martial arts is where you can do weapons work outside, of course. But the you know, I love being outside, and Rafe's stuff's really, really good as well. So recommend that. Of course, if you haven't bought the library of recordings yet, what the hell are you doing? Come on. give yourself a favor, support us too. I'm £1 million in debt. Actually, not so much anymore. Only two-fifths of a million, I think, now. So it's much supported to help us get to break even. But also, just for your own learning, that there's 1,000 sessions. You know, the one I did at midnight last night with Charles Eisenstein, for example, was like truly special. And it's hard to find time to catch everything. I know on this channel, there's loads of other great talks coming up today. So go through the portal as normal. If you want to discuss things more on Facebook, please do. You can always tag Philip there if there's a conversation about Aikido going on. I'm guessing he'd probably join in. Yeah, I think that's all on the technical things. As Roma says, 50% off on the package until after the conference. So you can pay double in 2 weeks if you like. All right. Good. The last thing is the coffee break. So if you fancy a chance or chat to people, we have these Zoom breakout room coffee breaks ongoing. Rome, anything I've forgotten before I hand back to Philip for the final word?
No, we also have some free resources. Check it out. Some coupons and discount and ebooks. Mark Walsh's book as well.
There we go. Giving away my book as a PDF. Okay, this has been lovely, really uplifting. Appreciate it. Thank you to our tech hosts. Philip, we're putting a book together with an embodiment tip from every single teacher. It has to be one sentence because there's 1,000 of you. So what would your top tip be for us to put in the book?
Just move. Move and move with somebody else. You know, don't do it on your own. Try and connect with somebody. And just enjoy moving, whether it's dance, martial arts, or whatever, just do it.
Beautiful. Yeah. I have to run off now to do something less fun than this. So have a great day, and I'll catch everyone later. Yeah.
Well, thanks to everybody for listening, and I hope it wasn't too boring. And have a great.